Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. And today, of course, it's a Monday evening and Edwin is back for another rant. Hello, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing fine. Almost didn't get here, Martin. Came back from the dentist. So if I'm a little bit drowsy or droopy or I fall asleep halfway, it's all that, all those injections and all that other shit that the dentist pump into you whilst you're laying there.
I know, not a pleasant experience, but hopefully, well past now. And I gather it's pretty hot down there. You know, summer's come back with a vengeance.
No, look, it is, and it's coming with a spring's coming with a bit of a vengeance. But look, at the end of it there's also. Some of the auctions are heating up and others are cooling off. So we're worlds apart in adjoining suburbs or suburbs that are right next to each other. So it's interesting. But one thing for sure, Martin, I can see the chatter of the wife effect is coming into play again, as it did last year around the same time, towards the end of last year. You know, all the young families, all the families that basically telling the husbands, listen, you better buy this year, otherwise you're on the street. but then again, you got to think of it. Before we started, we were just discussing the rental market, and we go back to that same question: where do people go if they get they get given notice to vacate? They get given a no grounds notice in New South Wales, 90 days, or they're coming to the end of the fixed term lease and they get their 2 weeks notice before the end of the fixed term lease and you've got to cart pets, little ones around with you, or God forbid, one of the adults has got a disability or you've got a child with a disability. It's going to be very, very hard. But it's a mixed bag. We said last week that for the next 4 to 6 weeks there was going to be a mixed bag of reports. In some cases, we'll see some of our friends, the property bears that post out all sorts of things on Twitter. All of a sudden, now they're inspecting six properties. So I can only come to guess that there's a bit of a wife effect happening there in that household. But we're going to get a lot of different voices coming in and a lot of different views. And Catherine Cashmore brings out one that we thought we'd touch on at the beginning of the podcast, Martin, and that is, she makes a statement, the cliff has happened, in relation to the Sydney Morning Herald report where our treasurer talks about basically more than 50% of the people have already experienced and looks like steady as she goes, according to our politicians and some of the pundits. So, let's see what happens. But as you and I have discussed in the past, I think the sustainability of people and the want and the tenacity of people wanting to stay in the principal place of residence and not move on, not sell, for the sake of security for the families and the children and the localities that they're bought into, that will make them sacrifice a lot of other things in order to stay housebound. Again, you've got no choice in terms of rental in most of the regions of Sydney, and where do you go? You got to uproot and move further out, east, west, southwest, northwest, wherever you can find a roof to put over your family's head.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. So there's a couple of observations from those first couple of slides. Yeah, we're roughly halfway through now the refinancing. Although interestingly, if you look at it from a different perspective, which is, well, what's the size of the loans outstanding? In other words, how much credit is still to turn? It's not as high. And the reason for that is that some of the earlier loans were a bit smaller than some of the later loans. And a lot of people were on 3-year fixed or even 5-year fixed. So, there's still some more to come. CBA's data roughly confirms that we're over half now, but a long way to go still. And the other factor there, of course, is that interest rates probably will go higher. So the inflationary impulse is stronger oil, you know, look at what's happened to oil in the last few weeks and look at the exchange rate. Net result of that is that oil's now significantly higher than it was previously, and you've still got high energy costs. So I think inflation is not dead. But the other really concerning issue is that those looking to find anywhere to live, whether it's to buy or whether it's to rent, are finding it really difficult. And we'll chat a bit later about the fall in the total listings on the rental sector, which is just continuing to be grief stricken. But the other point, you're dead right. If you've actually got a property, and even if you're struggling to pay the mortgage, what people are actually doing is not paying the mortgage. They're still paying the mortgage, but what they're doing is pulling back on other things. And a classic example, you mentioned dentistry right at the top of the show, right? Well, one of the things that I'm seeing in my surveys, people are foregoing dental treatment to be able to pay the mortgage. They're foregoing other healthcare related issues. They're eating less. So that's the true cost of the problem at the moment, because people are so paranoid about trying to keep the property they've got, because they know that if they don't get the property, they've got nowhere to go.
Yeah, nowhere to lay your head and be, be at ease. And that is one of the biggest concerns. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see moving forward, Martin, what the banks actually do. I mean, they've got a duty of care to those that have pulled out a mortgage. They've got a duty of care to assist in that assistance package that no doubt is already probably being dished out in a lot of cases. It's going to be interesting to see what facilities they provide. I go back to where I said there's no bank that wants to be the first cab off the rank to take first page news in the Sydney Morning Herald or any other publication to say, these are the first bastards that put a family with kids and pets on the street. Nobody wants to do that. And with the regulations around lending, I can only see but for more reasons coming in for the banks to help and assist a lot of, help and assist a lot of these families navigate through these hard times. But banking sector aside, individuals themselves, I mean, and this is one of the things about the tenacity of the Aussie mentality, is that the tenacity that we almost sort of inherit here in Australia, and we've grown into, is superior to what I've seen all around the world. And a lot of people, a lot of families, will grit their teeth. And again, another dentistry metaphor out there. They will grit our teeth and we'll move forward. Run rain, hail, or shine, thunderstorms, and whatever else comes by. And people, as you say, will do without. And unfortunately, they'll do without a lot of medical assistance. And bear the pain, the physical, emotional, mental pain that they're going to go through in order to navigate through these hard times. It's not easy. It's not easy. And I don't know what you see, Martin, but I really don't see a lot of change happening. I know there's going to be a lot of chatter in certain parts of across certain platforms. People perhaps selling below what they bought for a year or 2 years ago, but it's going to be interesting to see if a lot of these reports or these people that put these posts up, whether they do the background research and get a background on what it is. Are these homes going to be cross-collateralized with businesses? Like you said, there's a lot of pain out there. Inflation still, it's still real, and it's biting everybody very, very hard. So it's another added cost to our lifestyle. But in all this, one of the interesting things, Martin, is that obviously as we assist and help our clients also with renovations, we're not seeing the cost of renovations and cost of certain tradespeople going down. As a matter of fact, we've just got notice from our electrician that his prices in certain areas are going up. So prices continue to rise, but we're going to also see some of the reports, the mixed reports of home prices are also rising in certain suburbs of Sydney.
Yeah, it is an interesting situation. And, you know, I come back to a couple of fundamental points. First is the banks, as you say, are extending and pretending. You know, what they're doing is offering people longer term loans, interest only loans, anything to keep them out of the default bucket because they don't want to see defaults rise. But what I'm seeing in my data is that from my surveys is that some people who are closest to the edge are now not able to get sufficient help from the bank to be able to solve their problem. So if you're in that sort of middle bucket, in other words, it's tough, but it's not ultra tough, then you can probably get help. But there are more people now dropping over into that bucket that is actually the bucket where they don't have enough cash flow and they've got no levers they can pull. And what I'm seeing there is that the bank's willingness and capacity to help some of those people are actually getting more limited because there are more of them. That's the first point. The second point is this issue of rising costs, I think, is really important because actually, if you look at the data relating to the construction costs for new properties, they're still rising. And that's despite builders skinning back on the quality of the materials they're using and skinning back on, you know, a bunch of different things. So you've still got that upward pressure in terms of new builds because the costs are rising because inflation pressure and wage pressure. And you've also got this issue that rents are rising. So there are so many upward pressures that are actually acting on the market as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why in some areas we're still seeing prices relatively firm. But if you look carefully, that's not true uniformly. So there are other areas where prices are continuing to slide. Again, you know, regional areas is where I see a lot of damage at the moment in terms of from those peaks. So, you know, just to the old favorite mantra, you got to look granular. You can't just take the average to be able to actually try and extrapolate what's going on. And what about the WeChat chatters? What are they thinking at the moment, Edwin?
Well, the chatterers are still hot, you know, hot to trot with homes. It's all about all in. They're all in with homes, and more homes. As we spoke last week, we talked about the fact that they were going to be putting their apartments, you know, 3 to 4 or 5 year old apartments on the market. They don't care whether or all they're concerned about is getting as close as possible to the entry price, which you know, they may be, you know, tens or in some cases 100 or 150,000 apart from what others would be selling presently. They're prepared to forego that as long as they can sell quickly and then move over to the home side of things. They've got a huge appetite for homes. They're at the moment they're on. We spoke of a WeChat group, an investment group, you know, very, very one of the most robust investment groups, you know, predominantly in Sydney. They focus around Australia, but they predominantly look at Sydney, you know, centered in Sydney. And they're five properties in 5 years. Has now morphed and splintered into those that can't, they don't, that the calculated that they won't be able to buy 5 homes in the next 5 years. They've now got a secondary group, which is 2 homes in the next 5 years. So it's it's interesting what their appetite is. Again, we go back to they're on the sideline. They're ready to go. Their finances are in place. They're not waiting for the magic Tom Panos or Sydney Morning Herald headline that says, you know, this is it, this is the bottom. They're already looking, they're actively out there. Agents are telling us that they're seeing a lot more activity, or, you know, WeChat activity, as well as the, what I call the sleeping tiger activity, which is the Indian community are moving out as well, and because they too look at these investment opportunities of homes and converting those into budget accommodation as well, because that's another demographic that have got an appetite for single room lettings or even bed hoppings, as some would call it. So the whole budget accommodation. So that's where they're at. And Martin, if you recall last week, we discussed what the WeChat chatters were doing, offloading apartments. One of our followers, sent me some information with look, it's anecdotal, it's a one-off, but this is the interesting thing, and that's a slide that I sent you there with the DM conversation that I was having with them. And this is a perfect example of a WeChat chatter that bought this particular apartment for $900,000 when you include stamp duty and all other costs. It's around about 930, call it 935,000. With legals and everything else. So they've held it for only a couple of years, but they're offloading it. This particular owner is offloading it. Our follower is currently renting that property, and they this is exactly what we discussed that the WeChat chatterers are doing. So they're getting out of these investment scenarios where the non-performing, as they call them, the non-performing, and they're moving into something that they can convert. Now, this property, I mean, if you look at the address, you'll see that in that particular pocket is not a pocket where it would lend itself to a budget accommodation style of dwelling. I mean, apart from the fact that it's a two bedroom, it lends itself to your traditional market. But look, that continues to be the chatter. And this is what we say to our followers, and I'm saying to our clients as well. We've got to monitor the markets that we're looking into. We've got to monitor them very closely. We've got to look at them, as we say, granularly. We've got to look at what's happening in the markets. Not all markets are performing the same, but it's also very, very important. The overall message from this is to see what and where the focus is going to be for the chatterers, as well as the sleeping tigers, in any other ethnic community as well, because that is what's driving a lot of the markets at the moment, is that those ethnic communities, ethnic groups that want to be centered around their community, which they create shopping hubs, the bigger community than your local neighborhood scenario. It's whole suburbs that come collectively under a community banner and concentrate, whether it be education, retail or shopping facilities or restaurants. And that's what I'm seeing a lot of happening. And if you're going to be competing in those communities, you've got to be prepared to go, as I say, you've got to be prepared to go toe-to-toe with people that have got greater interest or more vested interest in being in those communities than somebody that's not of that ethnic background.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a fascinating case study here, where people are now shifting properties relatively quickly. And again, in my surveys, I've done some work here on looking at motivations. And there was an interesting piece that Alan Kohler did yesterday evening on the news, talking about the fact that a lot of investors were actually getting out of investment property. And he quoted some figures in terms of why people were doing it. And he said one of them was because they couldn't make the maths work, so the costs of the property were rising. But he also said something else quite interesting, and that he said that there's been significant changes in the law, particularly in Queensland and Victoria, relating specifically to things like pets and pet ownership, and accommodating that within the rental sector. And a lot of investors don't want that. And he actually showed a breakdown across the states of what proportion of properties took pets. And the highest was, I think, in Queensland, where about a quarter of the properties took pets, when in fact the legislation is that pets should be allowed in all rental properties. But in Victoria, it was a much lower percentage, and in New South Wales as well. So his argument was that one of the reasons why investors were getting out was not only the economics, but simply because of the changed legislation that included things like fire alarms and the other stuff you've got to do. But his argument was it was actually driven quite significantly by the change in pet regulations. So I don't know how true that is, but I thought that was quite an interesting observation.
Yeah, look, good on for him following our show.
We have mentioned it, right?
Look, how long have we been saying that these ad hoc policies that the government are pushing out in the in the perception that it's going to assist renters, when in actual fact it hasn't. You only have to look at our neighbours or our cousins across across the waters there in New Zealand when they introduced it, and it all went to shit. Now here, look, the motivation starts correct in fixing the problems around the landlords that are very slow at getting things fixed, very slow at adhering to the regulations, are very demanding. But unfortunately, the market that we're in right now, these bastards get away with a lot of stuff that they shouldn't. But this is, I also go back to the real estate industry, Martin, because we're also at fault. Now, I probably rejected one-fifth of rental properties that we ended up with in our rent roll. The equivalent of what we had in our rent roll, I probably rejected one-fifth of rental properties for those reasons, where it was troublesome landlords that didn't want to get things fixed, because when you only need to contact the current property manager, or you only need to contact, or if they were self-managed, you only have to do a historical check on the tenancies and so forth. You could see the trouble that how troublesome these landlords were going to be. You look at the condition of the property, how badly it was maintained, and you could tell that there's certain things that property managers will do, but there's a lot more that we're not meant to be doing, and it's meant to be, the onus is meant to be on the landlords to fix and to rectify, and so forth. So, but unfortunately, the situation that we're in, where we were calling it from the election of 2019, we were saying we're going to walk into this mess, and we could see that things were going to start turning for the worse for tenants, and then due to the pandemic, it just got even worse. And we are where we are right now. We could see how, and I've been documenting for more than 15 years, the lax attitude towards some of these properties that are out there and are being leased as rental accommodation. Now, I was saying that the other problem is not only the landlord, but the other problem is also the industry that takes on these rental accommodations. Why? Because it means some income coming in to the through the rent roll to the offers. Because right now sales aren't cutting it, and unless you're getting other forms of income into the offers, you're starting to to bear a lot of pain as a business, and unless your rent roll is providing anywhere between 60 to 70% of your business overheads, well, you're going backwards very, very quickly. Most of the offices, I can tell you, Martin, their rent rolls, if they do run a rent roll, the majority of offices are only running 30 to 40% of the rent roll income is covering the overheads of the business. So they've got to be pushing sales. And this is where George gets hot under the collar, because principals, licensees in charge, owners of these businesses start focusing on sales, and they forget about the governance of the rental book, which is the key asset, which is the key job that we're really meant to be doing. Sales was just a byproduct in decades gone by. It's really your true professional real estate agent really came out of the property management side of the business, not your high flying sales executives that are allegedly selling 30, 40, 50 properties a month. So everything's gone topsy turvy, everything's gone upside down, and that's the nature of where we are right now, because again, the government's too, the state and the federal government are too lax. They don't have the cojones to put pressure on those vacant properties that are out there. We're going to look at the rental numbers later on, and it's staggering to see nationally how many properties are on them, on the market for rent. And yet you and I, Catherine Cashmore and others, know that there's over 1 million vacant properties around Australia that could be persuaded to come into the rental arena, and a lot of these issues would be solved.
Yeah, there are definitely solutions out there if people thought broadly, and that includes Airbnb. And there's some discussion, you know, in New York, they've changed the regulations around Airbnb. And as a result of that, the proportion of Airbnbs dropped and the number of first-time buyers has lifted, according to some data I saw quite recently. Here in Australia, of course, nobody wants to talk about the 1 to 1.2 million vacant properties. Some of those are long-term vacant because you've got international investors as holding them and just sitting there, never intending to live in them, but just holding there as a capital asset in the long term. And of course, you don't want to wear it out, so you don't actually have anybody living in it at all. And Docklands, of course, is a good example of that in Victoria. So there are things that could be done, but you know, as with always the case, they don't actually want to embrace this holistically. And we'll come on to another issue later, and that is, of course, where they are actually now talking about building. There's also no ability to put the infrastructure in place that's required as well. So it's a nutty situation. But nevertheless, in some of these outer suburban areas, according to at least CoreLogic and Seven News, prices, well, they're you know, they're on the way up. Record property prices, they blared over the weekend.
Yeah, well, in some of these areas, as they can see in the screenshots, I mean, that this is what they've overshot the previous highs in these particular areas. But look, on the majority of the people that saw this report, they look at the percentage rise in these areas, right? That's what they're looking at. But you and I look at why, and this goes back to your ethnic communities gravitating towards one key location because of the language, because of the parents and the grandparents, the ease of shopping, the ease of that of communicating with others of within that ethnic community. You've also got your places of worship. You've also got your educational facilities as well that make these communities gravitate and start competing for these homes. And obviously over the winter months, a lot of these areas, the for sale numbers retracted. So this is of course it was going to happen. Dusty and I put our predictions on the first day of 2023. We put our predictions and we said in a lot of these areas, a lot of the particularly the WeChat chatter influence areas, this was going to happen. Prices were going to exceed the previous highs, and this is what we're seeing. And this is what happens when you've got a low amount of numbers on market, which you and I have been documenting and talking about for a while. So you've got your ethnic centres, you've got your WeChat chatter influencers, you've got your sleeping tigers are out now on the prowl and on the hunt, and these are the people that are driving. These are the buyers and investors that are driving a lot of these markets outside of your overseas buyers and all the immigration that's coming in, and a lot of people haven't really grasped the amount of people that are coming in with 30-40% deposits on to buy $1-3 million homes. Some are buying them outright, knocking them down and building new dwellings on something that you and I would think otherwise. But this is what we're what people are coming, they're coming over with money as as in years gone by, where the majority of the migrants would come in with very little, going into rental accommodation and work their asses off for 3, 4, 5 years until they got permanent residency before they could buy, and now it's open slather. So these are the policies that have driven a lot of these, and also the demographic. Some of the observations based on the demographics, based on the population movements in Sydney that we can see. So we not only just look at those percentages, Martin, but we can tell in a lot of these areas and give it a more in depth account as to why those markets have written so have been driven so hard and have gone much higher than previous highs. And guess what? Regardless, and sorry to be the bearer of bad news to some, but those prices are even going to go higher because nothing's there's still in a lot of these areas. You've still got very low listings on market, and we're still sitting a lot lower than what we were in the spring of 2022. And then you've got all these other policies around the rental side of things that we were just discussing. Well, it puts less options on the market for people to decide. So everybody is really doing side hustles, back hustles, hustling all over the place. And short of sending their infants out to work and busk in the local shopping center to earn a quid, to earn the keep, so they can keep the principal place of residence. The tenacity of the Australian the Australian mind, the Australian people is one that they will hold on to that roof that they have over their head as long as possible, and go without and put up with a lot of pain, because there are really no other options at the moment, Martin.
No, I agree. And going back to these particular suburbs, it's interesting that there's quite a strong correlation between increasing levels of mortgage stress in some of these areas too. So if you look in some of the Western Sydney areas, it's fascinating how mortgage stress is continuing to build. And what I'm seeing in some cases is that people are actually being forced essentially to sell, but those properties are then being swept up by some of those new migrants who are coming in with more capacity to get a bigger mortgage if they need it. Or in fact, many of them are buying for cash. So there's an interesting transference going on there. Now, those people who are forced then out, then they're forced into the rental sector. And quite often what I'm seeing is that they then end up renting, pretty grotty places, maybe even further away from any facilities, similar, because that's all they've got. So there is this sort of drift going on in these suburbs and movements out as people come in. And that's the way that the low supply and high demand is actually shaking out in practice.
Yeah, and this is what we keep on saying. You've got to be really, really careful what's out there, and don't be fooled by the shit that's been put out on the market in a lot of areas, because a lot of people, this is the time. If you're going to offload a problem, this is the time to do it, right? This is the best time to do it. And this is what we're getting, a lot of choices, even our Twitterati friends that also post stuff on Twitter with regards to open houses, they also can see what we've been posting up as well for quite a number of months, if not years, and that is the choice based on the different seasons, based on the demand and supply, or supply and demand, and what's out there. The majority is crap. And that could sit on the market a little bit longer. But the expectations are still very high, nevertheless, Martin. And this is where it's going to take, anywhere between 4 to 6 weeks. And only if the numbers on market continue to rise, and there's no other global event that could be starting in India through some bat-delivered virus thing that's going to lock us all down again. And then we go back to 2020, 2021, right? So, unless numbers, if numbers don't continue to come on market, albeit as slowly as they have been, but if they don't continue, if they stagnate, well, this is going to continue to play out. People are going to be forced to buy the crap that others want to offload. And this is where people have got to be extra careful in overpaying in a lot of these areas because they don't want to have a look at a little bit further out or in the suburb next, nearby or close by, because they want to be in a particular suburb, and they'll end up buying a lemon and a problem that's going to cost them an extra, tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, because of all the rectification work that they will need to be done within, possibly the first 6 to 12 months. And that's a reality. This is what's happening. I mean, I'm hearing dreadful stories out there of people that have jumped into the market where they've jumped in boots and all, relying on agents, on agents' words and so forth, and ended up with homes riddled with termites where they can't, the homes have been condemned, but they've paid top dollar for homes that looked swanky and shiny and polished on the day when it came, when it came 2 3 months down the track, then issues and things creaking and all sorts of things happening, thinking it was all ghosts and phantoms and ghosts of previous dwellers from that household, haunting the establishment. They find out that it's termites that have absolutely eaten the frame right out, where they've condemned it, and now they're only going to get land value prices, but they paid top dollar. So this is the stuff that people have got to be wary of. We've got to be careful.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that people are buying defective properties without taking precautions. And the other driver that I'm seeing in my surveys is schools. The location for specific schools with particular characteristics is also a very strong driver. So I've noticed in the last few weeks, as I've been looking at the data in more detail, that actually interests in some areas are much higher. And then you actually drill into it. That's because of the schools that exist as well. And some of those schools are actually quite unique in some of the services they offer. So I think the school zoning and the capture zones around schools is also another factor that perhaps people that don't necessarily fully take into account when they actually think about individual suburbs.
And this is a big driver, especially with the ethnic communities, is the schools. A big driver, not necessarily with the Aussie mindset, but with the ethnic communities, that is a big look. I'm a public school boy, right? So that's it's driving it. Interesting that dealing with teachers and having teachers as clients, I found something very interesting from what the conversations with them is. A school could be could have high grades, high demand 1 year, 4 years down the track. It could be a totally different different scenario altogether. But I think that's going to stretch out a lot more, as I said, as the ethnic communities gravitate to certain areas that have got schools that are in demand, and they will tend to be top of the school rankings because of the way that a lot of ethnic communities tend to revere and respect the educational system and the teachers themselves. So it's an interesting driver overall.
And just to sort of take it slightly further, it seems to be a stronger driver now, and I wonder whether that's to do with the types of people that are now coming in as migrants, because they often come in with families, and families with kids that are of education age. So they're looking for immediately for where can I find the best education for the kids that I'm bringing into the country. So a lot of first generation people are making decisions based on the potential education formulas that are around there. I think that's quite interesting. And whilst I've always seen it in the data, it's a lot stronger amongst new migrants.
Look, no doubt. Hence the reason why you've seen parts of the Blacktown LGA just skyrocket. You got one in suburbs right next to each other because they're not in the same school catchment. They've just absolutely flattened out, and you just sort of but it goes back to the school, goes back to the school places of worship, and yeah, the and also the what I've seen the cluster of shops that cater for a community that's attracting a lot of a lot of interest for certain migrants as well. Yeah, you got the old you got the small clusters, not your bigger not your bigger shopping areas, but you got these small clusters, and they're becoming very popular among certain groups. You just throw in a restaurant, throw in fruit and veg shop, and fruit and veg that would cater for the cuisine of that particular community, and all of a sudden you've got a thriving neighborhood that they all want to live that live near them. And then then you've got your cafes, your little restaurants, and so forth, and it's a place where the older generation can communicate, and that's very, very important to a lot of the older generation, to be able to get out and be able to converse with others of in the same language. And that's the diversity, and that's a wonderful thing about the Australian lifestyle, right? But having said that, I mean that's the greatness of the people, but then you've got idiots driving the helm and bringing in we should call this segment political shenanigans and follies. Last week was all about the housing the Australian Future Fund for housing, and yet we're yet to be given an understanding of how that's going to work, apart from the fact that it's going to put another layer of administrative people there that will need incomes of $250,000 plus per annum. And this week you've got nothing no less than last week. Now you've got the fact that the Financial Review says no new rail projects for the next 10 years without major cuts. There you go, Martin. That's they give it to us in one hand and take it from us with the other, right?
Well, it's a bit nutty, isn't it? As we've said all the way along, the trouble is that you can just throw properties on the ground and build them as cheaply as you can. But what about the connectivity? What about the infrastructure? What about the other things that need to be there? And this is a classic example again, where those outer suburban areas have very limited transport options and reliant on the roads, and of course the roads get clogged. It's interesting because Matt Barry made the comment that if the government can't afford to build the infrastructure, how is anyone expected to build the homes for 600k coming in per year? And no new road projects the next 10 years without major cuts. The whole thing is nutty. And unfortunately, this is just a replay of what we've seen over the last 10 to 15 years. And you can go into a lot of those outer suburban suburbs and Sydney, Melbourne and other places too, but particularly Sydney and Melbourne, and there's almost no infrastructure. Even things like shops are hard to come to find, let alone other transport options. So this is another example of bad planning and just throwing more properties at it. And I've argued, of course, quite recently that this program that they're talking about, the $10 billion, it's not going to touch the sides. But this is another aspect of it. No infrastructure either. It's just going to be absolutely nuts. And years down the track, people will find that those areas are going to be very unattractive.
100%. You're going to go, but this again goes back to our podcast that we did about 4 years ago, where we said, all roads lead to Sydney CBD. We broke the ground. We broke the, this is what it's all about. Whether it was the Libs or the Labs, this is it. It's all meant to happen in the center of Sydney. Every road is pointing. Every arterial road, every major road. Points to the Sydney CBD. Points to the to the centre. Everybody else can go get nicked, right? And it reminds me a lot of that the movie, Brave New World. I don't know if you watched the movie or read the book, Martin, but it's Brave New World, where the elites and everybody lived in this in the cities, and they had everything. It was everything AI computerized, and you could do all sorts of things. You had a pill for this, a pill for that, and you had your alphas and your betas and your the different classification of people that were incubated. And brought up into the world, and then you had the rest of the people outside of the walls, outside of the boundary. This is where we're getting to. This is what's happening. Pretty soon we're going to have one of the politicians is going to start having notions of building a wall. I'm just that's what Dusty tells me. That's what
Well,
Dusty
I
tells me.
mean, it is interesting. I don't know whether this is a debate raging in Australia, but there's a debate raging in the UK about 15-minute cities, right? And so councils are effectively slowing down transport links and putting more barriers in to make it harder for people to sort of travel around, right? And that what they're trying to say is, well, you should live local, right? That's obviously to do with some of the environmental issues. And in some areas, if you're in the right area, living local might make sense. But the whole concept of creating these little local areas means there are going to be other areas where there's nothing, right? No infrastructure, just houses and 15 minutes to nowhere. So this is another example where the top-down planning and the thou shalts are actually creating monstrosities.
What do you do? What do you do in these situations? I mean, we'll see all this playing out in Sydney over the next few years, no doubt. And like Matt Barry hits it on the head. You can whistle Dixie for these, for the 1.2 million homes that they were supposed to be building over the next 5 years. Again, more pressure. More pressure on rentals, more pressure on those families that wanted to get into the first home, onto that property, the ladder, the first run, we're gonna see absolutely the crap that nobody would want to touch. And like I said last week, that I can foresee that a lot of the desperate people that are wanting to get into a principal place of residence, they're just going to choose to buy into shitty apartments, and all those shitty apartments that the witch chatterers are going to start offloading. That's because where else do they go, right? So this is it's crazy, but it's playing out. And you start looking at the numbers, Martin, and the numbers, slowly creeping up, slowly. Some suburbs are getting a lot more of the uptick than a lot of others. There are some pockets of, the West that are, in some suburbs that we're seeing numbers, double, triple, quadruple. And your next door neighbor is, still sitting on two or three listings. So you've got to be careful. What you hear, what you read, what you listen to. Start looking at the numbers individually. But look, the good thing is that they are still rising, but ever so slowly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's worth just underscoring, of course, that the listings are still well down from the 5-year average. So it's not like it's sort of, accelerated, it's just moving up slightly. Melbourne is pretty much the same too as well. It's worth just having a quick look at Melbourne. So here's the Melbourne for the 11th of September at 23,954. And then if we go through to following week, 24,275. So, it's the same old, really. Small incremental listings. But the other point that I see is that some of the new property that's coming on is getting swept up quite quickly because some of it's not too bad and there are a lot of people out there. But there's still a lot of stuff hanging around. So there's a lot of old listings that are still not shifting. And that's either because the vendors are still expecting a high price, or the quality of the property doesn't warrant the price that's being offered. So whilst you can see that there's a net slight increase, the truth is that the number of dogs on market are rising a lot faster than the number of more attractive properties.
Oh, definitely. And they'll stay on market a lot longer. They'll stay on market a lot longer. And as I said, it's going to take about 4 to 6 weeks for the vendors' expectations to start dropping, and only if we continue to get more properties, more listings on market. But if they don't see that themselves, their expectations will remain high, because what I am seeing, although the asking prices drop, or they start with a low asking price and it seems low throughout the campaign, they're getting good to very interesting, very high results at the end. They stick it out. It's a chess game, in a number of suburbs. You got to play your cards right. It's or call it a poker game, whatever you want to call it, but it's really, you got to play it right. Otherwise, you can lose real quick, or you can walk away with a smile.
Absolutely. I love mixing the metaphors. Is it cards? Is it chess? Well, it's a game. It's a game that actually only a proportion of people can win by definition. Just quickly on the auctions, not a lot of movement. I mean, the clearance rates are still, well, they're okay, but they're not anything to write home about, are they?
No, and we've seen a rise in auction numbers this coming Saturday, because soon after that we've got your school holidays, so we'll go that they'll pop again. And yeah, we should, in my view, we should be, we should be, closer to your 1200s. I mean, Louis Christopher uses a different, this is the domain numbers. Louis uses the REA numbers, which because it's a broader field, a broader look into the Sydney region than domain. We just stick to the domain numbers because of the, that's what we've been doing for all these years. But Louis will put out his numbers, and I would say that because it's a broader looks at, I think his numbers almost go up to Gosford. So you'll probably get his view. You'll be talking about 1200 or 1300. There'll be a rise, and the mainstream will use the REA numbers as well, just to add a little bit more fuel to, to the chatter, and a little bit more, more finesse or whatever, just to, have a story to tell. But at the end of the day, it's still, the numbers are still low, and dull, as far as I'm concerned.
Pump them properties, that's what it's all about. And then let's just quickly cover the rental situation. We sort of touched on this, but just for clarity. So this is what was on rental listings on the 14th of August, so 10,840, right? If we then track forward to the 11th of September, it was down to 9,872. And then if you come to this week, 9,518. So you can see there that this continues to maintain the trend of dropping numbers of properties for rent in the Sydney region.
Oh, it's getting scary. It really, really is scary out there, Martin. And then you've got your national figures. Your national figures are alarming, even more so. Your national figures, according to, these are the domain numbers. You've got 41,500 rentals on market currently across domain. Obviously, a lot more people, a lot more states, and a lot more cities use REA as the main platform, but domain is what we our benchmark. But they're low. They are low. I mean, considering that, historically, on average in Sydney, we would be getting 22,000 rentals on market, which is 50% of what we currently have as a national figure. This is alarming, and yet the politicians do nothing. Yet there's, yeah, they're out there playing tiddlywinks, and playing all sorts of other, things, and throwing money of all sorts of other ideas and other divisive instruments. And when at the end of the day, there's a huge need for housing, for a roof over people's heads, longevity, not short-term solutions of caravans, mobile homes, or work sheds, and the like. It's farcical, but this is where we are. These are the times where we are right now, and it's scary.
No, it is, Edwin. And just to sort of contextual, right? We're looking at a total inward migration of somewhere between 500,000 and 600,000 in the next little while. Put that against the context of 41,500 rental properties available in the country, plus, of course, a lot of other people who are trying to move anyway and do a lot of things. So, I mean, this is absolute. It shows you the craziness of the policies. It shows you, and it's all crystallizing, and it puts more and more pressure on the rental sector, of course. Now, as we come to the end of the show, tip of the week. Go on.
But just before you go, Martin, on that note, look, if you multiply that, if every dwelling that's advertised for rent there on average has four rooms, even on budget accommodation terms, we still don't even get to accommodate 50% of the migrants coming in this year.
No, absolutely. And of course, the other point there is that the demand is not equally spread across the whole country, right? So there are hot spots where there's huge demand. You know, some of the students in particular areas, some first generation people coming into other areas. So that's one of the reasons why we've got this patchwork story. That's why we've got significant volumes in some areas, less in others. So again, it just comes back. You need to understand the local dynamics to be able to actually decode what's going on. And talking about decoding what's going on, tip of the week, more on the auction front.
Yeah, look, I thought we'd keep that thread going. And this is because I was standing right next to a couple of tigers at an auction there at Epping on Saturday. And it was interesting how the agents work, these newcomers into the market and how they play on the emotions, as you and I say, it's all theatre and it's all based all around emotions and pressure sales. And it was interesting. I mean, I've heard it all before, but just how they keep on telling the people when they go up to them, they're saying, "Look, the other side, they're going to give up another 5,000, and you got the house." And after they put in five, the other party obviously has been told the same by the other agent. And they say, the other side are, that's it. They're maxed out. They're capped out. If you offer another five, that's it. They've got no more. And then they offer five. And then before you know it, the vendor's got another 50,000 in their pocket, right? But look, kudos to the agents, because that's their role. That's their job, to get the most for the vendor. Outside of what actually happened at that auction, apart from the fact that the vendor got crunched at the same time because the reserve was 2.4 and the home got sold for $2,285,000. Outside of that, the tip is, look, if you're at an auction, you're participating at an auction, you're an underbidder, somebody else is on top of you, and the agent comes up to you and starts giving you these and you've got it, it's yours, just pull them aside and say, right, ask them first and foremost, like we said last week, ask, is it on the market? Is it on the market? Because what's the point of inflating the price and being driven by and driving the prices another 100, 150 in your area that you want to buy into because you got it all emotional? It was never on the market. All you've done is just set a higher bar for next summer out. And number two is, grab the agent by the collar or the collar of the suit
or something grab appropriate.
Pull them towards you and say, okay, if I give you the extra 5,000, will you guarantee that I am the buyer? And if they can't give you that guarantee, just let them go. That's just one way of handling it. I'm not saying it's the only way, the ideal way, but you can't do that. I'd love to see somebody do that whilst I'm on the other side.
but you make an excellent point, right? What's the point of going into a sort of an incremental bidding war when you don't even know whether the property's on the market or not, right? Because you don't know what the playing field is. And what guarantee have you got if you do? And the number of times I've been to auctions where I've seen this game where they sort of play the ping pong ball between two or three people, right? And they're doing is just squeezing a little bit more, and blow me, then the property isn't on the market at the end of the day. So what's the point?
You just set a different benchmark for when it gets passed in to then the expectations, and you fed that beast. Now, this is from a buyer's point of view, right now. So the other thing is, again, you got to be wary. Like, I actually had a chance to speak to the Tigers afterwards, and I said, "Champ, look, he was when they were conversing, they were right next to me. They were already telling each other we're already 50,000 above our budget." Right, they were trying to find different ways to get the 50 if they ended up with the property. So you got to set the bar before you even get there. You got to set your maximum point. So they were already 50,000 above what they really wanted. The mortgage broker, had told them they could buy for. They were calling friends, relatives, all sorts of people, I imagine, to get the other 50. They were already, in a way, a bit of a panic, and they almost ran it through. I just had a friendly chat with them, and I said, listen, even if you offered another 20, the WeChat chatterer had another 30 to go. So it's a good thing you dropped out when you did, because all you were doing was just inflating the price. And you could tell, you could read the room, you could read the auction of that. They had no chance, unfortunately, but they drove it another probably about 45,000 for the vendor, which did, at the end of the day, put the property on the market and it got sold, although way below the high expectations that they were given and the reserve on the day. But that's the way the game is played.
Yeah, the game is played. That's exactly the way to think about it. It is a game. You need to go in there with a clear ceiling and, an understanding that you are not going to go above a certain amount, particularly now where people are overextending themselves left, right and center with the higher interest rates. So it's really, really critical to know what the game is and to play it right rather than get swept up. And I made a show some time ago that we've discussed before where we highlight again, auctions is a very emotional process. It's deliberately designed as such. It's deliberately designed to push people further than they want to go. So the antidote is to know what your limit is and stick to it.
That's it. And if you can stick to that, you come out a winner, whether you walk away with the property or not.
Yeah, spot on.
You can walk away with the money, you walk away as a winner.
Well, Edwin, thank you very much. I'm glad to say that you got through it without falling asleep, which is good. So I hope the dental treatment worked. And I'll look forward to catching up with you again next week, where there will be more shenanigans to explore, more wee chatters to chatter with, and, of course, more price data too.
All the best, Martin. Look after yourself.
Take care. See you next week. Cheers.